Yeah, sort of quite... Is it languorous, the word? Quite slow, that one, isn't it? That was Jake Bug. How about that for a name? Jake Bug and a guy called Noah Cyrus. I don't know which is the word. I think I'll probably change both of those names. If I was either called Jake Bug or Noah Cyrus, they would have to go. Anyway, that was called Waiting, and it's 28 minutes to four. Mark Searby, is he? Mark Searby, that's a good name, you see. I wouldn't change that.
Yeah, well, you know what? You were just saying you'd change those names. Jake Bug is from the same place I'm from Nottingham. Oh. So I've got to, you know, I've got to...
I've got to be careful what I say about this guy.
Yes. Yeah. So, no, it's a, you know, my name's okay, isn't it?
It's
Nordic. It's from the Vikings.
It's an unusual name. I don't know whether I know any other Searbys, but, you know.
There is a town up north called Searby. I know that, yeah. But beyond that, I don't know anybody else with the same surname.
Right. Yeah, Marcus here, in case you didn't know, Marcus here every Friday to chat about films and Blu-rays and DVDs. And it's normally two... films, isn't it? And one Blu-ray, or one DVD, which is normally a Blu-ray as well. So, what about the films? Have we got anything decent to talk about?
Oh, well, I think we've got two really good films at the cinema this
week.
Really?
Because you were a bit iffy about last week.
Yeah, I know. It's the other way around this week.
Okay.
Two really good films at the cinema, one Blu-ray, which we've got to talk about it, but it's not very good. So let's start with the cinema films.
Okay.
My Little Pony, the movie... I've got to say that I don't know much about My Little Pony. I grew up in the 80s, you know, I grew up with He-Man, and I kind of always remember that My Little Pony was kind of like the opposite side of He-Man and stuff like that. So
didn't Danny DeVito voice a version of My Little Pony?
Well, he might well have done. This is the thing, I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, okay, there's been lots of TV movies, there's been lots of TV shows. There's never been a full-blown movie at the cinema. So this is the first time we're getting it, which is, you know, kind of rare when you think we're now, well nearly 30 years on from probably when it started, might even be earlier. So I know very little about My Little Pony going into this film, which is a refreshing change. You know, going into a film, not knowing anything about it, is quite nice, especially for somebody like me. Let me read you the synopsis, because I think this synopsis is incredible. A dark force threatens Ponyville, and the main six are sent on a journey beyond Equestria in order to save their homeland. When I read something like that, I'm like, instantly I'm thinking, I want to see this now. And Maine 6 is also spelt M-A-N-E, so it's a wonderful pun on the horses as well. I got to say, I had an absolute blast watching this.
Yeah, is it a teary film?
There's a couple of teary moments in it, maybe, but, you know, clearly this is aimed at a very small kids.
Yeah,
you know, there's
no
two ways about it. And as with very small kids, the mottos and the morals are laid on quite thickly. So there's things about, you know, growing up, loneliness, friendship, working as a team, being able to recognise bad in the world as well. So there's a lot of that going in. But the funny thing was, watching this film, two films sprung to mind when watching this. Disney's Aladdin and the Lord of the Rings films, which is kind of a bizarre combination, but it works very well here. Let me explain about this. The Aladdin side of things, it comes from the villain of the piece, the Storm King, basically, who looks and sounds and acts exactly like Jafar from Disney's Aladdin. You kind of like them, you know, there's a little bit of a warmth to it, and then you start to find out their ulterior motives, and you go, oh, okay, this is a classic villain. So I guess if you're going to steal from the best, sorry, homage, we should say homage, if you're going to do it from the best, you know, because Jafar is a great Disney villain. The other side of it, The Lord of the Rings. As I said, the main six, these are six horses, talking horses, I guess you would call. I honestly don't know. Who basically have to set out on this road trip, a quest, to go to a big mountain. Now, this sounds awfully familiar. I mean, this is, you know, Tolkien all the way. There's no Gollum in this at all, but there's lots of different ponies along the way that they come into contact with. Some are good and help them, some are not so good and kind of have their... kind of like, you know, they don't want to help them, but they pretend they will. There is a very, very entertaining cameo from a groovy, cool cat called Kappa, who helps them on their way, but kind of has an ulterior motive as well. I thought he was hilarious as well. There's lots of songs in the film as well, you know, to keep it going, and it's very bright, it's very colourful, it's full of energy, the story barrels along, it's never boring. I saw this with a cinema full of kids, and I've got to say, all of them were transfixed to it.
Is it a kind of a Finding Nemo type film, is it?
It's possibly... I would say it's almost like a prequel type thing of something like that. You know, Finding Nemo's got a lot more of it's got a bigger message in it, and, you know, it kind of resonates with those adults, whereas My Little Pony probably won't. So that's why I say it is primarily aimed at young children. But for 95 minutes, I had a lot of fun. And, you know, going into a film and I come out and I've had fun, that's enough for me. So, I came out, I enjoyed this film and I didn't expect to.
Pandering to the child in you.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's true.
What's the second film?
Okay, so we've got a complete change here. The Death of Stalin. This is set just after the death of, obviously, the dictator Stalin, where the committee operating under him fight to see who will take his place. Now, with a title like The Death of Stalin, you probably think this is going to be a three-hour art house epic. It's not. It's written and directed by Armando Iannucci, who did Alan Partridge, The Thick of It, and Veep. So, you know, if you like those, you know what you're going to get here. I have to say, this film is excruciatingly funny. It is a comedy of errors about one of the most hateful men ever in world history. Stalin, this is the great thing about this film, is that everybody who's in it, it's great British cast, uses their own accent. So it's not with the, you know, the regional dialect you would expect. So Stalin has this Cockney accent, which obviously, you know, it makes him this comedy character already. He drops dead, and then we get this little clique of mates, and, you know, all sort of gambling and drinking with him and whatever else. They sort of bumble the way through trying to find out who's going to take over. So
are these the names from history? You know, Khrushchev and people like that were knocking.
Yeah, no. Khrushchev is played by Steve Buscemi.
Okay,
and we've got Jeffrey Tambor, who plays Malenkov as well. This is a brilliant performance from Jeffrey Tambor. Basically, he will not give a direct order. If he says no and somebody goes, oh, are you sure? He'll go, oh, well, hang on, I'm not too sure. So, you know, it's all of these comedies of errors. We have Biera, I think that's how it is, played by Simon Russell Beale, a very weaselly character, the type of guy who you hate from the beginning because he's positioning himself into power by playing everybody else off of each other. It makes everybody in this film, who we know from history as being these horrible people, it makes them into fools because of how funny it makes them. Iannucci has done this previously with other regimes, especially in the UK and in the US. Now he's done it again with this regime. It's got all classic British hallmarks, so it's slapstick moments, there's laugh out loud jokes, there's lots of subtle humour going on in it as well. It doesn't put a foot wrong in terms of comedy. It's so funny constantly as well. So if you're going into this expecting a history lesson, don't, because whilst the overarching storyline is true to life about Stalin dying, everything else that's involved in it is not true at all. It is very cringeworthy, I've got to say that. But I like that humour, you know, it made me cringe, it made me embarrassed at some points. I've got to say, you know, I think this is one of, if not the funniest film of the year so far.
All right. Give us the title again.
The Death of Stalin.
Okay. That's Mark, who's talking about a couple of films there, and he'll be talking about a Blu-ray and a DVD. Is it Blu-ray and DVD?
Blu-ray, yeah, DVD, it's, download, yes, it's everywhere.
Charlie Puth, that was, and how long the title of that one? It's 16 minutes to 4 on this Friday afternoon. My brain's not too good today, Mark. Mark Seaby is with us. I'm glad you're doing all the talking. See, by Friday, my brain's starting to seize up after... This is my fifth show of the week, you see.
That's so why I'm here, then.
That's nice, yes. So it's good that you're here on a Friday, because I really appreciate it, particularly appreciate it on a Friday when you come in. Anyway, on to the DVD and the Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. Is it on 4K as well?
Probably. It probably is, yeah.
This is a big film, isn't it?
This is a big film, yeah. We're talking Fast and the Furious 8. Have you seen any of the others?
Yeah, I've seen, I think, the first couple ages ago. I haven't, because they came out quite a while ago.
Yeah, they did. I really liked the first one. Didn't like the second or the third or the fourth or the fifth. And then it seemed that, like, in part 6 and 7, they decided to play with a lot of the tropes of, you know, action films and made it very tongue-in-cheek and very humorous. And I like that about it. So this time, we're Dominic Toretto, played by Vin Diesel, is still the centre of everything, basically. And a mysterious woman turns up and seduces him into the world of terrorism. And the rest of his crew must fight to save what is important. The answer there is family and cars, to be honest with you. We already know that because that's from the first one all the way through. So it's cars and family all the way through. This, as I said, you know, I liked 6 and 7. This has done a complete reverse, basically, and gone back to the stupid, unfunny, idiotic pieces of 4 and 5, basically. It takes itself far too seriously. The main storyline is basically about nuclear launch codes and bombs on submarines, which is horrible to watch. I mean, it's just boring. It's the stunts are not interesting. You know, this is a whole franchise based on cars doing great things, you know, flipping in the air and whatever else. The stunts feel like they're about 10 years out of date. There's a scene right at the beginning where Dominic Toretto is driving a car on fire, like literally on fire, through the streets of Havana. And right at the end, just as the car's about to explode, he dives out and he stands up and there's not a scratch or burn mark on him at all. And yet this guy has been driving this car on fire for maybe 5 or 10 minutes. You know, it's that type of stupidity. And I know that this is Fast and the Furious 8. We're meant to put our brains in neutral. But come on, we want some sort of relevance, some sort of, you know, real life, to be honest with you. The dialogue is atrocious. It's like they've got a work experience kid to basically say, right, okay, yeah, you just write the dialogue. Don't worry about it. On top of that, the females in the film, who, you know, they've had females in all of these films. It's like all they've done is say, right, okay, can you just go and stand over there and look pretty? And at certain times, we will belittle you as well. It feels like it's a film that is crying out for a female to come in and grab all of the men by the scruffs of the necks and go, right, this is how you do it. It doesn't happen. Instead, you know, oh, we've got more about Dominic Toretto beating up more men in a car or something like that. There's a subplot involving Dominic Toretto's ex-girlfriend that tries to act as a main plot device, but is actually utterly pointless. It doesn't go anywhere. And I think that's the problem with this film, is that it doesn't go anywhere. You know, you want it to be interesting, and it's completely pointless. I know I've given it a real kick in. There's a saving grace in this film. There is one saving grace in this film. It is the interaction between Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Jason Statham. These two...
So they've got some big names in this film.
Oh, yeah, no, don't get me wrong. You know, this is huge. I mean, this mysterious woman is played by Charlize Theron. You know, I mean, these are big names. Yes, The Rock and Statham, they just go at each other, hammer and tong. They trade insults like, basically, you know, like nobody else. It's very funny. It's clear that these two are absolutely having a ball doing this as well. Also, I've got to mention one scene in particular. Jason Statham has this action scene on an aeroplane. It's got to be seen to be believed, because I don't know how anybody has dreamt this scene up and thought, that's a brilliant idea. But you know what? It works so well. It's really funny as well. Clearly, Jason Statham plays up to all of this. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and I know people are going to accuse me of being stuffy about this film. You know, this is the Fast and the Furious 8. Just put your brain in neutral and expect popcorn fodder. I get that. I completely get it. But when you had what was a fun, jovial, tongue-in-cheek part 6 and 7 and worked really well, to go back to doing what they were doing so badly in parts 3, 4 and 5, it just feels like it was a complete waste of everything else that they did. You know, it feels like they've just decided, oh, forget everything else, we'll just start again. So I know it's the big film of the week, but honestly, it's not a good film.
You're not impressed, are you?
I'm not impressed. No, this is the thing. And I kind of feel like this is the place to stop. Actually, they should have stopped at part 7.
Yeah.
But this is the place to stop. But I do note with interest that Jason Statham and The Rock have got their own spin-off from this film. I'm fine with that. I will watch that film. I don't want to watch any more Fast and the Furious films. Okay. I'm bored.
Well, maybe there won't be any more. Keep your fingers crossed that there won't be any more.
Oh, let's hope so.
That's Mark Searby. He's been talking about films and Blu-rays and DVDs and stuff. And he will be back again next Friday. Phoenix FM.